If you want to turn in your Bible this morning to Numbers chapter 13, put a finger there. We'll look at that in a little bit. We'll also be looking over in Joshua chapter 14. Since I didn't use all of last Sunday morning's time last Sunday night, I wonder how long I can carry that on. I wonder how long that, you know, interest stuff. There's probably not any one of us here this morning, at least young people on up to the oldest ones of us, that haven't spent at least a little bit of time thinking about the year 2011. Depends on your mindset as to how far you've allowed your mind to wander with this new year, what it would hold, what it presents. There's probably even some people here this morning that have done what is common among people over the new year transition time, and that is set goals for yourself. You know, resolutions, New Year's resolutions, setting goals for the coming year. I am resolved to lose weight this year. Some people might even say I'm resolved to gain weight this year. That is humorous. I pastored a woman in Evansville that, thank God, she stood up and thanked God for allowing her to gain weight. Yeah, I about lost it. First time I met her, she walked behind the garage. I was out there working, her and her third husband. She was skin and bones, made up, very much makeup on, just a bag of bones. She wanted to get saved. When she got saved, the Lord took her off of all the drugs and all the stuff that was keeping her from putting on weight. And when she gained weight, she stood up and thanked God for gaining weight. It's amazing. You know, so there may be some people that resolve to gain weight this year, far as it is from most of our minds. I am resolved this year to buy a brand new car. Some people may resolve to do that sort of thing, or to build a brand new house. I am resolved this year to increase my net worth to $1 million. Any of you want to join me with that resolution? You know, when it comes to New Year's resolutions, you can resolve whatever you want to, because most of the time we forget about them within short order, because one of two things: either they are very shallow, or we lack the commitment to follow through with them. You would look at me this morning and say, yes, you're resolved to buy a brand new vehicle or to build a brand new house or to increase your net worth to $1 million would be pretty shallow. I've got $10. I guess I'm well on my way. Pastor Appreciation, you gave me $1,000. Or $100,000. Sorry, Edward. $100,000. I'm well on my way. How shallow can we be, or how lacking of commitment can we be when we think about what this year holds as its arms are wide open for us? Most of the time when we think about New Year's resolutions, we just resolve those things that we sort of would like to see happen. You know, we'd sort of like to do things, or to lose this, or to gain that, or to accomplish this or that. But far more often than not, it appears that humanity has become a people of good intentions, but lacking in commitment. I don't know where you would think yourself to be at in that category, but probably if you would go back over the last 10 years of New Year's resolutions, you might be able to answer that question yourself. You thought you really wanted to do something, but then a month or two down the road, if you made it that far, the commitment kind of wandered and weakened and finally dissipated like the morning dew. We're not here in church this morning to talk about our personal desires or our physical achievements or desires and our achievements. When we come to church, we want to think about spiritual things. And so at this point, when we think about New Year's and our New Year's resolutions or our New Year's goals, have we set any spiritual goals? What kind of a spiritual goal could we establish? What kind of a spiritual resolve might we have within our lives as we face 2011? For some, it might simply be that they want to gain some ground in their soul, some spiritual ground. In other words, growth, maturity. For some people, it might even be that they have a resolve to produce a harvest of fruit. Maybe somebody else, when you think about the harvest of fruit, maybe your goal would just simply be that you would like to produce a good seedbed, removing the rocks that hinder that plant and its survival. Spiritual goals. You think about spiritual goals in producing fruit or having a seed bed for the plant to be able to put down root and grow. Sometimes we have to do a soil sample to determine what the cause of our spiritual infertility would be. It's amazing what a soil sample will do you out in the agricultural world. The soil that is in your garden, or the soil that is in your field, the soil that is in your yard, can produce all kinds of greenery. Only they're weeds. Weeds that thrive on weak soil or poorly nutritious soil. But the product that you want to grow there cannot grow there, will not grow there, because it's lacking something. pH level, potassium, whatever it is, there's something lacking in that soil that prevents that. What about our spiritual lives? Yes, Lord, I want to have a fruitful harvest this year. What has caused me? What is it that is in my life that is prevented me from having a spiritual harvest of the past? Is there something specifically there that I need to have a sample taken and to show me where it's at? You know, sometimes I think, though, more than not, it's not so much that we who sit in church Sunday after Sunday, year after year, and camp meeting after camp meeting, revival after revival, on and on we can go listing the services that we have been in. And sometimes we're able to list a number of greatest of preachers of our day. It's not so much that we have something lacking within our soil or lacking within our desire, the surface of our desire, but sometimes it might very well be the depth of our commitment. We don't really reach to the point where we cry out, as those have cried in the past, "Give me, lest I die." We can go all the way back to Genesis chapter 30 and find in Genesis chapter 30 a young woman by the name of Rachel. And we can come from Rachel's day all the way up through the history books of our time and find people that have dotted the landscape of history that have cried basically the same thing. Although Rachel's cry was of earthly things, of physical things, but there's been people since that time who've cried out on the spiritual, "Lord, give me Scotland," or "give me children, lest I die." Has our commitment ever reached that level? Has my commitment ever reached that level? As we look at a new year, we recognize that if we are going to reach any kind of a goal setting to reach those goals, it's going to take some real commitment. When we talk about spiritual gains, we cannot talk about them without realizing that it will not happen. Spiritual gains will not happen without a cost. It'll cost us something. It'll cost us something in our heart of desperation. It'll cost us something in our life of commitment. It'll cost us of personal dimensions. David said in 2 Samuel chapter 24 and verse number 24, something to the effect of, I will not sacrifice that which cost me nothing. When he was going to do sacrifices, and somebody saw him coming and recognized him to be the king and said, here, King David, you take all the things that you need out of my possession and you do what you plan to do in sacrifice. And David said, no, I cannot sacrifice that which cost me nothing. If you're like me this morning, the first tendency would be to jump on that and say, oh, well, thank you. Appreciate your kindness and go ahead and sacrifice because it doesn't hurt me any. Maybe you're not that away. But you see, the reason why I believe that David was not that way in this setting was because his heart was so burdened with what was going on and what the requirement was for sacrifice that he said, no, I can't do that. I need it to cost me something. I need myself to feel the pains of this particular thing. You see, when we talk about commitment and spiritual gain, it's going to cost us sometimes our appetite. Sometimes it'll cost us our sleep. As I said, looks like sometimes some are still sleeping. Sometimes it'll cost us our pleasure. Sometimes it'll cost us our ease. What did God say through Amos in chapter 6, verse 1? Something that we want to write off and scratch out, or we want to put white out over top of it, make it look better than what it is, when God said through Amos, woe unto them that are at ease in Zion. You know, I like things comfortable. I don't like a mattress that makes my back hurt. I don't like a seat in the van that gives me discomfort over many miles of travel. I don't even like to sit in a tree stand that's uncomfortable. I want to be comfortable. I'd like to have a recliner sitting up there on that tree. I want some comfort. Take hand warmers for my pockets. Take hand warmers for my glove. Take hand warmers to stick down in the legs of my pants so that I can some way, somehow, obtain a little bit of comfort out there in the cold wild. But I want comfort. As much as I can possibly have, I want comfort. And so many times I'm afraid that I allow that. And I'll use myself as an example. Perhaps you'll follow with me as well. I allow that to drift into my spiritual world, into my spiritual life. I want to have as much comfort as I can in 2011. Let's take a look at the Old Testament and an Old Testament man who demonstrates what I'm talking about. Demonstrates what I'm talking about. Numbers chapter 13. Verse number 17, Moses tells this group of individuals to go spy out the land of Canaan. Now, we could spend a lot of time reading down through this. We could spend a lot of time looking at it this morning. But I want us to get real quickly on down to understand that what Moses was wanting to have accomplished here really did not get accomplished. There were some goals that Moses had in his mind for these 12 men to go into the land of Canaan to come back with. One of those goals was to spy out the land and to see what they were and where they were, how they were positioned, with an understanding in their mind that they were to draw up a goal, or draw up, let's say a different way, they were to draw up a battle plan or a strategy. You see, this hill right here holds a big city, and the only way we're going to be able to attack that city is through a strategic plan. The only way we're going to accomplish this is by careful looking at the surroundings and the scene and to see where we can find a weakness. To bring back the blessings, yes, but they were to find out what was taking place. How do we make our approach? Maybe they were even supposed to, in their mind, be thinking, what kind of sacrifices are we going to need to make in order to accomplish what we are sent in here to accomplish? It doesn't say it, but I'm wondering if also Moses had in his mind something else. Because it seems like one out of the 12 decided to make it his lot to do it. And that was to choose a specific portion of the land for he and his tribe, he and his people, to settle in. But we find out that there seems to be only one out of the 12 that did this, and his name was Caleb. Can you picture him there in those following verses as he looks at the mountain and he looks at the valleys? He sees the mountains in their grandeur. He sees the valleys in their plentifulness. I don't know about you, but it's amazing to me to think and allow my mind to wander as to how big these fruit that they found really were. They had to pick one branch with one cluster of grapes and carry it between two. How big were the grapes in that cluster? Most of us are glad to have a grape, you know, produced on your personal vines that are large marble size. But I don't believe that it's even anything near that size. It was much larger. Were they the size of golf balls, ping pong balls? Were they the size of small apples? One cluster between two. The pomegranates. How big? I like pomegranates. I like this look at pomegranates. I've tried to eat them, but there's too many seeds in them. You got to juice them down. But that pomegranate. You know, fist size is what you'll find in the store. What were they, basketball size? The figs and the olives. Softballs? You know, how glorious was this valley of Eshcol, this producing land? Caleb's the one that saw all of those things. Yes, he did recognize that there were some big guys there. Some people would tell us that the Anakims were over 11 feet tall on average. 11 and a half feet tall, many of them. You know how tall that is? That would be about the size of Caleb standing on my shoulders. Not this thin either. Yeah, you say, well, you're fat. Well, if I was 11 and a half feet tall, I'd be pretty thin. Imagine it. And the Jewish people were smaller than what I am, so you know what they said. We'll look at that in a little bit. But it was really a complete imbalance when you look at it from the earthly standpoint. But we don't find anything about that in Caleb's view. He sees their strongholds. He sees their size. He sees all of that. But he's looking at a third option. And he's questioning within himself the value that is placed here. Is it worth it for me, knowing that it's going to cost me something, knowing that it's going to take something out of me, realizing that I'm going to have to give in order to receive this good land, but God has promised to ever be faithful. And so as these 12 men come back to Moses and the group, they are the chosen people of God are at a crossroads. They're asking themselves, what does the future hold? What are we going to do? The crossroads of their day. You and I might look at 2011 as a crossroad as well. Which direction are we going to take? What road are we going to go on? How are we going to achieve what we want to achieve this year? Crossroads, that means that there's at least two roads, two different options to walk on, and that's the way it was with the children of Israel, Caleb and his brethren at this time. There was, first of all, let's look at the negative side and look at the crossroad that they could turn and go down the road of cowardice. You'll find that in verse number 27 beginning. We went into the land that you sent us. Surely it flows. It's got wonderful things. Verse 28, but nevertheless, these people are big. They live in big cities. They live in big places. It's walled. It's fortified. There's no way that we can get it. First of all, the thing that comes to my mind when I think about these 10 spies that gave a negative report, I'm thinking in my mind, what did they expect? The children of Israel had nothing in the way of military might. Were they expecting to go in there and see a bunch of limp wrist people waiting to have someone come in and destroy them? They had to have thought that. Otherwise, they surely would have said that God is going to go before us, like Joshua and Caleb did. I don't think that it would have mattered who lived in that ground. The way these people had their inferiority complex resting on their shoulders, it was just a matter of time for them to come back and say, we can't do it. We're not able. We don't have any swords. We don't have any shields. We don't have any chariots. How are we? This little group of people that we may number a few million people, but how are we going to, in any kind of military might, be able to go in there and attack this people and think that we have any means whatsoever of destroying them? Because they were all only looking at the natural. They were only looking at the physical. They were only looking at what they could hold within their hand, and they felt so weak. As a matter of fact, they gave us a picture of how weak they felt. They said, we are as grasshoppers in our sight as well as grasshoppers in their sight. We look at ourselves as being insignificant, and they look at us as being the same. See, it was all sealed up already. God was not going to help them. They were going to go down the road of cowardice and depart from following after God. Let's take a look at the road that was leading the other direction, and that's the road of confidence. Confidence in God. Numbers chapter 13, verse 30. Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are... Caleb, wake up. We are well able to overcome it. Caleb, you're still dreaming. The point was that Caleb wasn't concerned about the temporal. He wasn't concerned about the things that most people were afraid of. Jump over to chapter 14 and verse 6, 7, 8, and 9, and it'll tell us a little bit of what was going on. The land which was passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear. Here's where he lists them out. Don't fear the people of the land, for they are bread to us. Their defense is departed from them. The Lord is with us. Fear them not. But the congregation decided, let's stone them instead. What is it that Caleb is talking about? He's talking about people that are afraid of people. People that are afraid of persecution from other people. People who are afraid of the testing and the trials and the problems that will come. Could I say it this morning? Will you hear me this morning that in 2011, the same promise that was given to Caleb, that Caleb was trying to give to the children of Israel, stands for us. He said, fear thou not. The spiritual goals that you have in your mind, the spiritual desires that you'd like to see accomplished, the spiritual revival that you'd like to experience in your heart this year, it's possible if we fear not what people around us may think or say or do. Where Where do the two roads lead? I'm not going to spend the time talking about the road of cowardice. We know where that one goes. It led to 40 years of wandering and death to a whole lot of people. I want to spend the time looking at the road of confidence. Where does it lead? Where did it lead? I believe that you can simply and easily say that that road led to a crown of glory. As a matter of fact, as soon as Caleb finished making his speech, the people of Israel began to talk about stoning them with stones, but then we see, and it's not because they were going to stone them with stones so much, it wasn't that God was settling down to give his approval to the stoning, he was settling down to protect his man. But it says, the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle. See, Caleb had just got done urging people to reach forth and to go forward and to press onward. Don't fear the things that are around, but to follow the promise of God. I like the chorus Jerry Glick penned. It's the glory that will draw lost souls to him. In spite of whatever else goes on in our world, in spite of whatever else goes on in our life, if we're going to achieve any kind of success in our spiritual realm, achieve or to reach the goals that we have established spiritually, we're going to have first and foremost the glory of God in our soul, in our midst. It's the glory that'll draw them. It's not going to be our fluent speech. Well, I can't speak that well. You see, it's not a matter of our ability to speak. It's what God does on our heart. It's what God does in our heart that will be able to be broadcast and to be experienced and to be felt by those that are there that we're trying to lead to be a witness or an example to. Caleb said, I want that mountain. He saw it for what it was. He saw it for the task that it was going to involve. He realized that there was going to be commitment to achieve it. But he wasn't so settled just simply on his own task, on his own goals, that he failed to recognize people around him, because it does tell us that he didn't just focus on his, he helped others focus on theirs too. Did Caleb have to make sacrifice? We don't know what all that sacrifice was. But we know this thing about the man Caleb. He wholly followed the Lord. Wherever that leading led, wherever that voice called, he completely followed. Joshua chapter 14 and verse 14, Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, unto this day, because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. That's a powerful statement. As a matter of fact, it's a powerful promise to you and I this morning. On the brink of a new year, with the mountains and the Anakims that are lying, waiting, looking at us down their noses as though we were mere grasshoppers. But I believe that that promise is for you and for me. That you and I would step out, that you and I would step up, that you and I would step onward and claim the mountain. Do the claiming in God's name, because God will help us. God will help you. God will help me. I don't care. It doesn't matter this morning what the spiritual goal is that you have in your mind, what you would like to see accomplished spiritually, whether personally yourself or in the spiritual circumstances around you. The goal that we set, the goal that we have in our mind, God has given us the promise that He will go before us. Claim the mountain. I want that mountain. Then claim that mountain. where the grapes of Eshel grow, where the milk and honey flow, then claim that mountain. Where the big guys live, where the fortified cities are built. It seems impossible. It seems insurmountable. Be like the old Kenizzite who told Moses, when it did come time to go in, he said, I'm just as able now as what I was 45 years ago. Caleb, you're still dreaming. These people are just as big as they were then, and you're 45 years older. You're crossing over the brink of man's strength. You're already going down the other side, we would think. Didn't appear to be the way that way for Caleb, because he continued on. How was it? I believe it's all summed up in his ability to claim the mountain in that he wholly followed. What are your goals this morning? Forget about your resolutions for physical things, for material things, for the temporal issues of life. What about the spiritual resolutions that you have in your mind? Maybe you haven't voiced them. Maybe you haven't even written them down personally somewhere. But somewhere in your mind, you have some personal goals. You'd like to see something accomplished in your own or in your area of life, your little sphere of influence this year. It's going to take a commitment. More than just having a good intention saying, I want to, I resolve to do, but I commit myself to the task that lies before me to wholly follow the Lord wherever He leads. What's your mountain? Go claim it. What's your mountain? Go claim it. Let's step out, step up, and step onward for the mountain that God has before us. Stand with me this morning. Let's go claim a mountain and do it in Jesus' name. Vaughn, would you dismiss us in prayer?